Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and today I'm joined by someone I've admired from afar for a long time, the host of Breakfast Television and formerly the co-host of Tim and Sid, Sid Sixero. Thanks so much for taking the time. I know you've been up probably since 3 or 4 a.m., so I appreciate you making some time after the show to join our show.
Alex, I appreciate it. I've been up for a little bit, but I'm pretty like I got my third wind. And I implore you, please find someone else to admire. But Donovan Bennett is a great person to admire. He's just ask him. He's so talented and handsome and just talented, and he's all the things. He'll tell you himself. Like just I think Donovan's someone else, but whoever. I think anyone else would be better than me. I appreciate
It's like when
it.
they say it's like don't meet your idols.
Oh,
That's
I will disappoint you. I'm so sorry. By the end of this conversation, you'll be like, "I what an incredible waste of time that was for me."
I want to on this show we kind of talk about journalists' kind of careers and I know I read somewhere that you said you always knew you wanted to be a journalist. What attracted journalism to you from such a young age?
I mean, the term journalist I hold in high regard. I thank you for using that word. I wouldn't. I don't know what I am, but I don't know if I'm a journalist. Well, I just couldn't do anything else. Like I wasn't going to play sports professionally. I wasn't going to be a doctor. I wasn't going to be a lawyer. I can't build anything. I worked in the garden center of a grocery store for a while. I'm terrible with plants, just with life in general, and nurturing it. I couldn't do a damn thing. Like honestly, I couldn't do anything else. And sports was a way, and covering sports, at least when I was younger, was a way to kind of, try and make a life out of sports. And I was terrible at everything else. I know some people say that as a joke. I'm not messing with you. I was awful at everything. So I lucked out in a major, major way.
Was it something where you at 16 was, talking to yourself and as if you were, a sportscaster? Was it something like that and you just always knew it
Oh
from,
yeah. Oh
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Whether if I'm alone in the basement watching whatever, the NHL or an NBA game on CBS back in the day when they had them. Yeah, it was a lot of that. And I enjoyed it. And I consumed like I just felt like I consumed so much sports when I was a kid that broadcasting was like just a normal thing that I would soak in a little bit. Like it was something I enjoyed doing when I had the chance, like especially through high school, just doing certain things. So it was definitely, this is something I was very, very interested in doing. What would I be doing if I wasn't doing this? I don't know. I think the world's a better place for not knowing that question. Or the answer to that question. Yeah, this was plan A, B, C, and H for sure.
And I know so many people know you for, being on TV, but I read that you didn't plan to be on TV. You planned to be a radio guy. What was that? Maybe talk about that beginning of your career. I know you went to Humber and then going to the Score as well. What was that like? And did you ever think that you'd be on TV at any point?
TV, no. TV, no. Because radio was just like I applied to many TV colleges and universities. It's funny in hindsight. I applied to many and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. And Humber College, I'll never forget it because Humber College at the time, I'm not sure if they still do this. But at the time, they made you do like a quick on-air air check audition with a microphone. And out of all the places I applied to, because they were the only one doing that, I got into Humber. And it was the best thing that could possibly happen to me. And yeah, radio was going to be it. Radio was going to be 100% my outlet. And at the end of Humber, we got to, there was an intern opportunity when internships were a lot easier to pull together back then. Now there's a lot of regulations because somebody complained about it once to somebody, and now everything had to change. But there was an internship opportunity at a place called Headline Sports, which was really a new kid on the block and an exciting kind of place, but it was very radio centric. It was a lot of VOs, very little on camera. They were working towards that, but when I got there in like the fall of 97, it was very much a radio place. And you got your foot in that door. And the Headline Sports slash the Score at the time would give everyone a chance on air, basically. That was the beauty of the place. And that's it, kind of just went from there. But no, TV was not something that was in the offing. I can honestly say that.
I've heard from, I've had Tim and Donovan and Cabby Richards on it, and the Score days for you guys, it sounded like they were pretty wild. Do you have any stories from that time that you feel comfortable to share? And maybe just talk about that environment as like a young, being in the sports media game as a young person in that environment.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bunch of 20-year-olds or 21. Well, I was 20. Maybe a few people might have been a little older than me, but like we were all very young, very young. And we were in the middle of downtown Toronto all the time. And most of the time we get off work at like 2 in the morning. So like our night's just beginning. So like it was just late. There was a lot of latent. I don't know how else to say that. But it was a tremendous experience. Like I focus more, like it was a fun time, but I focus more on kind of like there was a lot of discipline in it. Like there was a lot of times, a lot of days in the same suite, you were grinding. It was not an easy place at times. And either you dealt with it or you weren't around. And I think like the one of the legacies of that place is if you stuck around, you had some metal in your backbone. Doesn't matter what role you were, whether you were director, producer, a voiceover person in the suites or whatever, it didn't matter. It was not an easy, it was a fun place. It was not an easy place because your guidance was like, if you didn't work out, then you were done. Because no one legitimately had the time to coach you like that. It was like everyone was stretched pretty thin. So if you made it there, it was a really good sign because it meant you were self-sufficient. It meant you were ready to go. And again, we're in the middle of downtown Toronto. Like it was a really good place to start. Like I didn't have to go mid-market. I didn't have to go to another place. I didn't have to go to London, Ontario, none of that, which I was prepared to do. So I really lucked out into a pretty good opportunity, I would say.
Is that something where you get those like 10,000 hours of where you feel like once you get maybe go up a level or get a show like Tim and Sid where you have that backbone of the work ethic discipline, but also just the ability to have learned how to be in this industry?
The 10,000 hours, that actually came at the Fan, I think. Because that was the toughest gig. Like it was one of the most rewarding, but it was the toughest. The opportunity was the Score, but where I started to really grind and figure things out as an adult in the business was the Fan. Because 3 hours of sports radio, I'll put that up against anything in terms of the toughest jobs in the business. Anything. Like we weren't thrown to music. Like it was us. And when I wasn't there, it was Tim. And when Tim took vacay, it was me. Like I really learned a lot. And nowadays with podcasting, it's actually a pretty healthy thing for young broadcasters to do this. And do it long form where it doesn't feel alien after a while. But there was a moment when I got to the Fan where like, and I would we had done podcasts, I'd done on air. I'd been a field reporter. I'd cover the Leafs, cover rap, all of it. And I sat down in that chair with that microphone and I went, oh, this is it. This is what the job is. So it changed how I looked at prep. It changed how I looked at a lot of things. Content, like anything became content, whether it was sports wise or something that happened to me at the grocery store. It didn't matter. But yeah, the 10,000 hours thing is true. And for me, it happened at the Fan, and I regret not a second of that. Like, I would not be anywhere if it wasn't for that experience and the confidence and the support I got from bosses during that experience. Because we kind of stretched things a little bit, and we were doing things other people weren't doing in a variety of ways. But yeah, the Fan experience was like, I'd listened to the place my whole life is the obvious thing. So you're on it. You're coming in for Bob McCowan, which is the other thing. And it was a wild experience. It really was. It was an extremely rewarding, wild experience.
Maybe talk about just the origin of Tim and Sid, and not just that, but how you think you were so successful, as a show, and how much did you maybe grow into that kind of finding your voice, I guess.
We found finding our voice was probably at the Fan as well. A little bit on the podcast before we went over, in our hour of it, of podcasting a day. But we had good chemistry at the Score, and we had better chemistry during more freeform stuff on the pod, and then it just became like we could do a lot of different things on the Fan, that allowed us to show a lot of different sides to people, which was really healthy. But we always just kind of worked well together, and we got each other's stuff. Like, we didn't always agree on the beauty is we also didn't agree on much sports wise. Like, I was more black and white with it, and he was more gray, and it was a lot of that. But in terms of the creative, in terms of being able to do stuff, like we it was the chemistry was always really, really good. And if you don't have that, it's tough to have a good show. I'm sorry. Like, chemistry is 75% of a good show. You can have the best producers, you can have the best talent, individual talent, but if they don't get along with each other on air, if it doesn't feel, and there are moments where you have to be there for each other. Like, if one guy messes up, the other guy picks up, if blah, blah, blah. Like, it has to be that. It can't be two people staccato. So, like, that's, whether it's a sports panel here in Canada, whether it's a show, whether it's a radio show, at Rogers or Bell, it's all the same thing. It's if you don't have chemistry, you're dead. Like, you're going nowhere. You are a forgettable show that will soon end. And, it's not easy to find, but you also have to be in a position as a talent to work with a lot of people. I've worked with a lot of people over the last 10 years. Tim and Dina primarily, but over the last year specifically here on Breakfast Television, I think I had 15 co-hosts in the last year before Meredith Shaw came on, and she's unbelievable. She's amazing. But like, I feel like I have that thing in me where I can work with a lot of people pretty well. And it's not everyone has that. Meredith has that. Chemistry is everything. And it's hard to find. Like program directors are under a lot of heat to try and get that right immediately, or you're done. It's very difficult. It's very like, you can take a bunch of hosts. I've seen it. You can take a bunch of hosts. Oh, we're going to send them on a retreat for the weekend to get to know each other. It doesn't.
That's not
That's
how.
not how this worked. What do you mean retreat? What are you talking about? Like, am I back at in like in Catholic high school? Like, what are you talking about? Retreat? You can find out within three shows, max, maybe even earlier, whether people have chemistry with each other. I'll argue till I'm blue in the face on that. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. And there's a few entities in this country that have it. There's a lot that are trying. And you can tell immediately which one's there. Immediately. So yeah, that's the biggest thing. And Tim and I always had it. And that's we and it was good because we helped each other out, and we made a bit of money. So that's it was a fun time. It was a
you
fun
think
time.
you think maybe the going from a podcast to the radio, you almost brought that part of the podcasting where it's like two guys just chopping it up, that is almost what you want in radio? Like, do you think that's where radio is going at all in terms of almost podcast form in a sense?
I didn't, the podcasting wasn't my idea. It was Tim's. I wasn't familiar. But it was when we got to the Fan, it was very like Don Collins was the program director that gave us a big break. And there was this constant kind of discussion between the three of us about traditional sports radio compared to how Tim and I would kind of do it. And at one point, like I said, not to Don specifically, but just generally, like when we did, there was a radio conference at Rogers a year and a half after I started there. And Don asked me to kind of sit there. And there was program directors from around the country. And I begged them to not do the one thing I see done a lot, which is a program director finding a talent somewhere, asking them to move, hiring them, come in. And then the second they get in the chair, they look at them and say, now change everything you've ever done.
Can't do
What's the fucking point? You know what I mean? Like, I've never understood that your role as a program director was to trust your gut with this person. So then let them go. You know, like a scout in the National Hockey League has one job. Do they have talent or not? Like there's producers where you can coach them up a little bit throughout the day, but like as a big picture, your job is to find the talent that you think can do the job. So that was always the only struggle at the Fan initially was kind of that. And they thought we couldn't do a show without swearing, which was funny. But I think we did okay. But yeah, I don't like it was the toughest job of my career, but I regret absolutely no part of that. I would not be anywhere without that experience. I learned if after I did that, I said to a few people, I can do like there's nothing in this business you can throw me that I can't do. Nothing. Because when you got to fill 2.5 hours of programming a day outside of commercials, it might be less than that. You can do anything. So,
What was that transition just to going on to TV? Was that different for like what was that like for you and Tim, I guess?
I felt personally, I felt I didn't get it. We could have got it even more right, is the way I always look back at that show.
Why is
Because
that?
we, it just TV, it's more condensed and like it's things I'm really accepting now because I'm on a show on breakfast television that it's a monster, but it's like the segments are tight because there's thankfully there's a lot of commercial. But like I just felt we could do more with time and time and we were I felt like I was always because I'm long-winded. It's my fault. And like when Tim and I would get together, we go. But like I always felt we were chasing our tail on TV and we could have done more. With that said, I'm very proud of that show. We did stuff nobody was doing. And I think there was a fortune in that show in that I didn't care what people thought about anything I said. You do need that to a certain extent. And it's not easy, but I don't care. I'm a little
Was
like
that
that.
always the case for you, where you go and you didn't
At the
really?
Fan, it really started to come out. Like I said a couple things in the Fan, and Tim was like, this is going to be interesting. And I went, yeah. And nothing. Nothing from teams, nothing internally. And then the first two times we did that, we're like, okay, can't do that every day. I don't want to do that every day, but like we can do it sometimes. We do it once in a while. Because when you do sports radio every day, the one thing, like the best times aren't necessarily when things are going well for teams. It's when things are a train wreck because that's where people really want to vent. And I saw that in spades over and over and over again. So,
I read somewhere, or I think I saw it on a podcast, that you said that the best part of you, like on TV, is when you're agitated and caffeined, up. Maybe
yes.
talk about that.
Yes.
Why do you think that resonates when you're kind of wiry and all hyped up and say something? Is it almost because you say the quiet part out loud? Like, what do you think? How do you think you connect with people when you're agitated, Sid?
Because I'm annoyed. And somewhere out there, someone's feeling the same way, whether it's politically or sports wise, or it doesn't matter. I think that's it. Like, never, the one thing that's hit me as this has gone along here is don't underestimate how many people at home feel exactly the same way you do. Because this is not a business where a lot of people do that. And I don't rip or besmirch anyone who doesn't. I get the trepidation. But I was never one who felt like I was burning bridges. I was just trying to do shows. And you know, it's it got I got lucky though in that it be, just became a thing that was an accepted part of who I was. Like somebody told me the other day, somebody made this analogy to me. I hadn't thought of it. He's like, you're South Park. I'm like, what do you mean I'm South Park? He's like, South Park says the most asinine, over the line stuff on everybody. And barely anyone gets mad anymore because of South Park. And that's what they do. And he goes, you're South Park. You've been South Park since the fan. That's what you do. Because no one's stopping it now. No one internally wanted to stop it. Now the train's rolling. He's like, you're Family Guy after you got renewed and the DVD sold. And I'm like, okay, it means I'm a little older. I guess that's what it means too. But I guess I got very lucky in that when that started with Tim and I, the bosses didn't just say, you have to stop that. They didn't. I still don't know why they didn't say that, because they could have. They could have easily said that, but they let it go. And it just kind of went from there. And I also believe, like, I know where the line is. Like, I'll get close to it and then back off a little bit.
Have you ever felt you've gone over it?
No. No. No.
And what the reason, like where, like what is that line for you? Like, can you
It's
almost
personal. It's like, keep it to what it is. Like, keep it to what it is. Talk about hockey, football, but it doesn't matter. Keep it to what it is. But I can see the line. Like I'm crazy. I'm not stupid. Like I can see it. So that I've been lucky in that I'm at least a little self-aware in that way, for sure.
I know you said that when you went to BT, it wasn't that big a transition for you, other than a couple little things. What were you surprised that it was quite an easy transition? And what's it been like to, go from just sports to like everything?
It was, I mean, it's what I wanted to do. It was everything. And I'm still doing sports, which is great. They still let me go. But I was just in, like, at that point, we were doing Tim and Sid, like, we were in each other's homes, and that I was done with that. I was done. I wanted to be back in a proper studio. I wanted to be back with proper equipment, with a proper setup. And the second, I was just so happy to do that. Like it came, like you could see it on air, how enjoyable that was for me, and still is. Like there were so many restrictions in terms of what the pandemic put on what Tim and I were doing that I was like, this can't continue. And it's so, like, whose fault is it? No one's fault, but it's just the situation where I couldn't continue it. I was losing joy for what I was doing. Like I had to get out of there. I had to get back into a place that had a spark. And, you know, the pandemic kind of ground us to a halt, and it was no one's fault. But it was a combination of a lot of things in terms of, like, I've been a news junkie my whole life. And I just felt that it was time. Like it was a lot of things lined up, as is the case for something like this. Like a lot of things have to kind of go right. And I was very fortunate, very fortunate.
I know you said that with that show and that, how prominent the show is and how many ears and eyeballs it gets, especially in the political realm, that you feel like your voice has quite a lot of weight and that maybe even you can move a little bit of, in the political realm. What's that like to almost know that, people in power care about what you say and, might even like, just what's that like for you?
It's a little weird. I don't know if I have power. I know they're watching. Do I have power? I'm not gonna be that bold. Thank you for phrasing it that way. I would not phrase it that way. They just want to see if they get ripped that morning. I think that's about it. Their comms people are smart. They want to see if they get ripped. But it's a different world. It is a different arena. Because political ideology, in a way, political ideology and like you're being mean to my sports team are very much the same thing. You know what I mean? Like the fans of a hockey team in this country and followers of a political party aren't that different. It's all whataboutism, and that's basically it. But like once in a while, you hit a nerve that's quite something, and then it kind of gets away from you online, and then it doesn't belong to you anymore. Those are the times that get a little weird, and they've happened a few times on the show. Like a Fox News picks something up that we did. That's always a weird moment. But it does speak to what we do here that they are watching. I can guarantee you they're watching. And the beauty of this is like come like right now with the Oilers in the Cup final, or come election time in the province or federally next year, or from a municipality standpoint, I'm out in Mississauga. Like we can talk, these are things we can talk about. And I like that. I like that. I think we can move the needle a little, or move the dial a little bit. We can. But I don't know if I would say power. But their communications people
Well,
watch.
yeah. What's it like, I guess, just going off that a little bit, like you just won an award for the show. What do you think, not just solely because of you, but what do you think, why do people resonate with BT so much, and in your opinion, as someone that hosts the show?
There's a way, like it's the actual structure of the show too, it gets very familiar with people. In terms of when we do things, that's one part of morning TV I wasn't like aware of. Like that's a big part. Just there's a familiarity in morning television that is like wild that I wasn't ready for. I was definitely unprepared for that. When you're a part of people's morning, it's a serious thing. Like you are part of the family. You are in the room with the kids. You are when they're having cereal and you're there and parents are eating breakfast and getting ready and you're there. And there's some weight to that for sure. For sure. So I still can't quantify like why it is like we kind of resonate, but I think it's a real show. I'll say that. I think you're like the BS meter isn't very high on the show, and there's some talented people doing it.
Is
I
that
hope that's it, because it was a real honor this past week to get that award. It meant a lot for sure.
Well, congratulations. And just kind of going off that a little bit, like I think you talked about, with Tim and Sid, but also coming to BT, like the producers kind of gave you that trust. How important is that just with the show to be pretty like aligned neck and neck with, the person that's producing the show to make the
Yeah, like you have to be. You have to be. It's a very difficult thing to not be aligned with the guy or the woman making those decisions. It's very difficult. So yeah, thankfully I don't have that issue. But I don't envy broadcasters who do. That's a difficult place to be. Because you have to be excited about the content. Like I'm selling content on air wherever I've been in my life, wherever I've been. If I'm invested, I can do that job better than if I'm not. So, I think that carries a lot of weight. I think, no, I can't. And again, at every level, I've had disagreements, I've had agreements, and it's part of the business. But you can't do 3.5 hours of stuff you're not interested in. I will bang my head against the wall if that's happening. And it hasn't at any point in my career happened. It's very important to be engaged, content-wise, is very important for me, and I've been very lucky. Very lucky.
I have to ask you just a couple questions about sports, just because this is a sports podcast, and you're in the fire, in the cauldron of, Toronto sports media and the Leafs right now with Mitch Marner. And you had a really interesting tweet, I think it was yesterday, about just the narrative about, Canadian teams in the NHL not being able to win the cup, and now with the Oilers, that might dispel that narrative. With Toronto, I guess just what's the pathway forward for this team to maybe go against that narrative and win a cup in the next couple of years? Like, where do you see this team going with so much up in the air?
I mean, I think the Leafs are in a far bigger trouble than anyone's willing to admit. And it's a salary cap issue, it's a draft pick issue, it's a prospect issue outside of their top guys. Their top guys are good. But past two or three, like I don't know who's ready. And there's a lot happening here that people aren't talking about. It's just, listen, like while everyone's distracted with the Nylander negotiation and Matthews, like, and now Mitch Marner's deal, and like, if you look over here, what do you see?
A mess.
They don't have a goalie. They don't have a blue, they don't have, like, Edmonton just maxed out on almost every blue liner they have, and they still needed six games to beat Dallas. And they're in tough against Florida. That's tough. The Leafs have so much work to do. And I don't think the fan base really, if they know that, they don't want to absorb it. They don't want, like, it's not an easy conversation to have. But someone explain to me what this team looks like in 4 years.
No clue.
Nylander or Matthews will be there. And who? This is wide open. I don't know where this is going. And there's gonna have to be a regression to reset the franchise to get to a place cap-wise where you can have a Draisaitl who makes like 7 or 8 million or whatever he makes. Like, you're gonna need those players. You need a 5.5. If only they can find Zach Hyman. They need a $5.5 million guy who scores a bunch of goals. Not 50, because there's only one McDavid, but like, give me 30. And Dubas messed this up so badly. I don't think people have realized it yet. I don't think they've realized it yet. And he didn't leave town with a bunch of fame like Anthopoulos did, where no one cared. And they said to the Americans, you figure it out. Dubas didn't do a damn thing. And I'm looking around. I can't be the only one. I'm looking around going, Where is this headed? I just don't understand. Treliving, I like a lot. I think he's a smart guy. I always trust a guy on his second job. That's where he has his most potential, I find. If you've been in the NHL for one go, like, I think Sheldon Keefe's going to win a lot of games in New Jersey. I really do. And because he won a lot of games here, that's what he does. And he may take them to the next level because he's learned a lot. I think Treliving on a second job, I trust. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Shanahan needs to let him do his job. Because right now, there's still, you feel that we can't change things. We can't. I don't care what Shanahan said on the podium. Every report I hear from people who matter say there are forces in MLSE who don't want to change it. Who do you think that is? Who do you think that is? The guy who didn't change a thing for 8 years. It's not Treliving. That I can guarantee you. And it's not Pelly, that I can guarantee you. And it's not Berube, that I can guarantee you. Unless it's someone above Shanahan, it's probably Shanahan. So I don't know how different the team's going to look this September. And this is not a good spot. What Leaf fan tells you we're close? Or we're a guy away. We're two guys away. We're defensemen away. Who says that? Nobody says that. Because it's not true.
How much do you think that they just missed the window? They always talk
Oh, they
about,
missed the window. Oh, they missed the window. They missed the window. The second they gave Tomas 11 million, they missed the window. Because you can't do that. You can't do that. Tavares has to turn into two defensemen making 4 or 5. Minimum. Minimum. I'll take one defenseman of five, and I'll take two guys at 2.5. And that's your blue line. And they didn't do it. And Connor Timmins got time. And Rasmus Sandin got time. And Liljegren, they keep looking at Liljegren like he's going to show up. And that's not Salming, guys. I hate to tell you. He's a below average NHL defenseman. I hate to tell you. So the Dubas era, one of the things I will do for the rest of my life is hammer anyone in this market who defended Kyle Dubas, because the mess he's left is extraordinary. If you really pick at the bones, if you really see what this is, look out. There's going to be two straight years they don't make the playoffs if they rebuild it properly. They're going to have to go back. They're going to have to go back. So we'll see. We'll see. But I don't expect a lot going forward. I'll tell you that right now.
How much do you think, there's the famous video of Matthews and Marner, or Marner and Nylander kind of going at it. How much is it on them as well? Like you know, blaming Kyle Dubas, but he wasn't the reason why Mitch Marner didn't score, hasn't doesn't never scores in game five, six, and seven.
Right. But
Just
he
like,
paid
where
him.
can you put that in maybe the equation?
But he did pay him.
Yep.
Like, I don't like, I heard Elliot made a really interesting point yesterday on 32 Thoughts, where he said he talked to a few Oilers, and he said part of the reason they're mad at the media is when the media over there brings up Darnell Nurse, they bring up $9.5 million, I think is his cap hit. And I was listening in my car, and I was like, what an excuse that is. In a hard cap world, to not, you don't want me to bring up your cap hit? That's what some of the players are saying. And again, Friedge is reporting it. This isn't a thing on Friedge at all. Just that argument back from guys in the room. When let me remind people of something. When players sign contracts in the NHL, the team never releases the dollar figure. You know who does? Agents and the PA, because they want you to know. So now we can't say anything? No. Not for Nurse, not for Marner, not for anyone in that discussion. In a hard cap, that number is life. That number is depth, and that number is expectation. Because when you pay that number, I need to see something on the stat sheet on the other side, or it was a failure. These are investments. These are stocks. So if you go 11 million on Marner and that's the postseason, you're sunk. Nurse, who I like personally, and I think some of the coverage was offside on Nurse for sure, but no one can tell me that guy's played well. Not for that number. They are lucky that Evan Bouchard has grown up like that. They're very lucky. But don't tell me we can't talk about numbers, and don't tell me we can't make that relevant. That's everything in this league, because Gary got his hard cap. And I think it's the most relevant thing in the game, because the owners wanted it to be the most relevant. And the players, quite frankly, wanted us to know how much they make. So if you're gonna jump through every hoop to make sure I know how much you made so you can crow as an agent or a PA, I got no problem with that. I will bring it up any time of the week to designate between failure and success on a team level. I have that option. So
No,
I'm
like,
glad Friedge reported that. I had no idea that that was the beef in there. It was good reporting by Elliot. I was shocked at that.
but
Shocked.
I know you've talked about how people say Toronto's a tough market and it isn't. And I, like, I'm in an NHL locker room. I cover the Sens here, and I sometimes think, like, why are these NHL players so, like, it's really not that bad. You know, soccer. I'm a soccer fan too. Like, it's not like Europe. Like, it's so different. Like, why do you think that is for players
It's
and
actually easier in Europe. Like, the media availability in Europe is very minimal. Like, those guys don't talk to the media much. The managers do. And before, like, a Champions League game, UEFA will demand a player sit there with the manager, but they don't talk often. Excuse me. So yeah, it's actually, believe it or not, it's easier to be a player with the media in Europe than it is here in the National Hockey League. There's a lot of media avail in the NHL, to be fair about it. There's a ton. But Look, what I have not sent Darnell Nurse out that morning where he was taking a ton of heat. Yes, I thought that was a weird media call. And the Leafs were protecting their players left there. Mitch Marner and Morgan Rielly didn't talk after game seven. Remember that? You want to pull Nurse for a game day skate? I think you're well within your right. I found that weird. But yeah, it's an interesting thing that's crept up this postseason for sure.
My last sports question before, I have one fun question at the end too, but why do you think all of the major sports teams in Toronto that, the Leafs, Blue Jays, and Raptors just seem to default to patience and not breaking anything up rather than taking action? Like, why do you think that is? Is it just the fan base will always come and, give them the hard earned dollars and
Well, I think when it comes to the Raptors, they've done it. The Raptors have made the hard decisions. The Raptors are the only team in the city that made the hard decisions. And TFC to a certain extent too. Like they saw some issues and dealt with them. And they Herdman's doing what Herdman does, and they've got a great start. So that's what he does. Masai did what he had to do. If you saw Pascal finish that playoff series against Boston with Halliburton out, I think you saw what his role is. And OG Anunoby can't play every game. I wouldn't have paid either guy top dollar. If the Pacers want to do that, knock yourself out. Someone's going to give OG that kind of money. Knock yourself out. These were hard decisions, and I stand by Masai. The Leafs are just a safe organization that don't want to rock the boat too much. And now they're where they are. They want every player to like them, and they lost every negotiation they've had, and now they're in the spot they're in. So they're a safe organization. The Raptors actually try to make things difficult. The Jays are in a situation where you just spent like $500 million on renovations and now you're going to tear it down? Probably not, right? Like I could tell you there's some powerful people here, Rogers, don't like that idea. So you're not going to do that. And you just got to hope it turns around and maybe re-sign one or both of Vlad and Bo at a reasonable rate. But the teardown with the Jays, like the more I think that through, there's no way that's you can sell that to anyone in this organization with a straight face. And I agree. So you can fire a GM, you can fire a manager at some point. I after nothing changed really after last season, I'm out of predicting the Blue Jays firing business. I'm not doing that anymore. But like I think all those teams have separate things going on, if I'm being honest. So I don't think all Toronto teams play it safe. The Raptors are not right now. But I think one does specifically. I think another one's in a bind. I think the Jays can't tear down right now. That the renovation just happened. Like people will lose their jobs for that. That's not in the plans. So yeah, hopefully, something tells me the Raptors might figure this out before everyone else again.
I hope
I
so.
hope, because this is what you do. Clear it out, say this is my guy, and wait for your moment. They've done it before. I don't know if Masai will be here for that moment, but we'll see.
Before I let you go, I asked the handsome promoter and actor Donovan Bennett to a couple kind of questions to ask you, and the first thing he said was to ask you said to recite the lyrics of Triumph by Wu-Tang. So that's the first question or even prompt for you to recite some lyrics.
I can give you, I bomb atomically, Socrates, philosophies and hypotheses, something, something, Machiavellis, lyrically performed armed robbery, the lottery, possibly they slaughter me, battle scars, Shogun, did remember hand is tremendous. That's all I got. I've been up since 3:30 this morning. I'm sorry, Alex.
That's wonderful. So, that was Wu-Tang your like I didn't have any context. Was Wu-Tang your favorite kind of
Do you know
no.
you don't know the Wu-Tang Clan?
I do, but I'm very young. Like I'm a 98 birthday, so
You look like
it's
you're 52. What are you talking about? You're really
oh,
young.
I appreciate
What are you
that.
talking about?
I know Wu-Tang,
All
but I
right, you have a project, young man.
Okay.
I believe there's a great documentary out. I've seen it. I saw it a couple of years ago.
Okay, I'll watch it.
I think it was at HBO. I forget who produced it.
Okay.
Watch the Wu-Tang Clan documentary. It was
There you
phenomenal.
go. Okay, perfect. I know Wu-Tang, it's like I just never grew up with
And
it.
send me a one-line review when you're done.
I
That's
will.
all I need is one line. What did you think of
Perfect. I'll definitely do that soon.
it?
This is
Good.
the second one was Donovan asked me or to ask you about your time watching Canada soccer with the Voyageurs. I don't know where or when this was. I was at the game when they beat Jamaica to make the World Cup. So I don't know if that's the game he's referring to,
Oh,
but
we were just one night. We were South End BMO Field one night with the Voyageurs. This was before it was cool to watch Canada soccer.
was this the USA game? I remember you went to that game.
Wasn't the USA game? It was earlier than that. It was like El Salvador or something like that. Like it was very CONCACAF, like
Okay.
super CONCACAF, before Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David, and it was like before that. But yeah, good times, good times. I recommend going to see and supporting Canadian soccer to anyone.
Yeah.
It's good for you. Make you feel better.
Do you feel any better about Jesse Marsh and what's happening with the
I
men?
will give Jesse Marsh the benefit of that. I'm not expecting a win against Argentina on June the 20th, but he's got some big games this week in Europe.
Yep.
Canada soccer, thank God, actually booked some real games. That was good to see. MLS teams seem to be paying for it, but I'm beggars can't be choosers here. I don't mind. We'll see. I'm going to give Jesse Marsh the benefit of the doubt.
Last one, Messi or Ronaldo? Where do you stand? I know you're Portuguese. Do you feel like the debate's over, or where do you stand on
I
that?
think the debate's over. Yeah. Now, Ronaldo legitimately might win a Euro this summer because I think Portugal are that good. Like, that doesn't change the debate to me. It
Was it as simple as the World Cup and that
Oh
fifth?
yeah. Oh yeah. It's a pretty big one.
It is pretty
Pretty
clear.
big one to me. I don't know. It seems to, I don't know. If you followed soccer like historically, it's kind of an important thing to win if you're going to be one of the best. So, yeah, all the credit to him.
Awesome.
The
Well,
Messi guy's okay. He's going to be all right. If he just applies himself, he's going to be fine.
before I let you go, anything you want to plug for BT? And thanks so much for taking the time. As I said, huge admirer. I still admire you after our 1 hour together. So I appreciate
Wow. I did everything in my power to make sure that didn't happen. And you still stuck around. God bless you, young Alex.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time, man. Thanks for
Awesome.
this.
Thanks so much, Sid.